Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Braun, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you doing?
Howdy. I'm down the bottom garden in my little cabin, doing my little show with my friend and your friend, Chris Abroad.
Oh, good to have you back. How you doing? What's going on?
Good. Good. Not a lot happening in my world, to be honest. I've been working on a couple of podcast projects and also worrying about my finances because a big tax bill came in. I was like, oh, nuts. That was unexpectedly chunky. So I'm considering selling a liver, kissing lads and lasses for money. Anything really. Just drug dealing.
Get myself a job. Get on Cameo.
Yes. Imagine who the hell would want that £10 a pop.
I think you'd be good at it. Your happy-go-lucky, sort of comments would be much welcomed on a dark day. Yeah. You know,
I think I'll just sell my liver.
All right, then.
How is Natsuki's cameo adventure going? Because it is one of those things where I think when it first started there was a bit of a stigma to it, but now I mean, not for a person doing what Natsuki does. I think everyone's quite willing to sort of give him money, but I think giving I'll use the example of Steve Guttenberg. You sort of imagine that Steve Guttenberg wouldn't really need a lot of money after his adventures in the 90s as one of the characters in Police Academy, you imagine, and Three Men and a Little Lady. And so I'm sort of thinking that he probably doesn't need my £250, but I gave him £250, and I still felt a bit like, nowadays you sort of the stigma around Cameo. I think people understand that it is a revenue source, and it's a really worthy one for especially like jobbing actors as well, because you don't make that as an actor.
Natsuki's made a lot of money from it. Obviously, I won't say how much it is publicly. But I'll show you the number on the screen there, Pete. Can you read
good.
That?
Good. He deserves every last penny.
But, like, I mean, Natsuki's doing very well out of it. I've always wanted to try and find ways of helping Natsuki and whatnot. And I think, Cameo, it's exciting to see he's doing so well from it. And he's well-placed at it and say happy birthday and be happy and fun. People often ask me to do Cameo. I couldn't imagine a worse thing. Like, I'd be so rubbish. I'd be like, happy birthday, Roger. Have a great day. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm mocking my own voice. But like, who's on Cameo these days? I remember when I looked it up a few years ago. And I know what you mean about the stigma thing. Think, oh,
it's not there anymore, though, is it?
Desperate. Well, there's some people on here. There's, I don't know any of these people. Is there anybody like famous?
There's always
John Burko. Alfonso Ribeiro from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Oh. How much is he? £249. Oh, that could be fun.
That could be fun. Get Carlton. Exactly. That's we've got James Buckley from The Inbetweeners, Nick Frost, Shaun of the Dead, Miriam Margolyes. I mean, I guess because I'm in England, they would. Brian Cox from Succession. I mean, I presume people are just getting him to go, fuck off.
This is amazing.
That's a bit of Jorginho, the Chelsea midfielder. Yeah, it's, wow. Look, it's a. If you've got the time to do it, I think it's a great revenue stream.
Can I? I wonder if I could like use this to the advantage of abroad in Japan. They do often say like no commercial purposes, right?
Yeah, you can. You
can I get
use
Brian
it
Cox
to
shout out abroad in Japan? Would that
well,
be
you can
right?
use it to. I think there is a commercial option. So if you want to get, I think Matt Letizia to do something. I think it's a grand. I noticed quite recently.
I want Alphonse Riviere to say you're listening to the Abroad Japan podcast, like we got Bryan Cranston to do back when you had the powerful job at Absolute Radio before you gave it all up to become a tax evading billionaire at the bottom of your garden in your shed.
I'm not evading. I'm paying it. That's the trouble. If I evaded it, I'd be happy.
God, I've recently set up a Abroad in Japan clips channel. It sounded like I was going. I've set up a tax avoiding account. In the case,
I've set up a fake bank account.
No, I've set up something much worse: an Abroad in Japan clips channel where Abroad in Japan clips go. So all the cool kids are doing it.
Yeah,
all the cool kids, aka just trash taste. And I've been advised to do it basically because people don't like to watch videos longer than 10 seconds anymore. I've had to reduce Abroad in Japan down to like snippets, down to clips.
Different parts, right? Okay,
effectively, and they're doing pretty well so far. I set it up because I wanted to like promote old videos and whatnot. So, but I actually found a cool blooper reel that I'd never released publicly, apart from on Patreon, with Jackie, my good Japanese friend Jackie, who you got drunk with. You got her drunk, from what I understand, 2 months ago.
I'm seeing her tonight, actually. Seeing her and Nick tonight. So
are you bollocks? Are you actually?
I am. Yeah,
what is
am.
This?
What do you mean, what is this?
What?
We're planning some kind of heist on you. I'm going to become better friends with Jackie and Nick than you are. And then it's
shocking.
Cool, isn't it?
It's cool, isn't it? Well, cool, I'm going to win their friendship with my Abroad in Japan clips channel, where clips videos are uploaded. It's been really cool, though. I've been cutting out clips from old videos. Like we took a clip from the bullet train video with Ryotaro, the world's most expensive train seat, and that video is in 1080p. But I've got this software called, I think it's called Topaz Video something or other. And it uses algorithms and magic and witchcraft to upscale the video from 1080p to 4K. And the results are astonishing. Like, it actually, I don't know how it does it. It sort of quadruples the pixel count. It like increases the pixels and clears up the image. And it's insane. It's really quite scary. I didn't realize technology had sort of got to this point. And certainly when I'm using like photos or images in my videos these days, I also run that through Topaz and whatnot, and it's really creepy. Like that sort of technology from Blade Runner, where it's like enhanced 25%, enhanced 50%. Like, we're actually there. We can actually take footage now and upscale it and blow up the resolution.
So what is it? I presume it's like a deep learning AI that uses some insane servers somewhere. So it's a package, or is it online, or how do you kind of work with it?
I think it's about $200, £200, which, you know, quite pricey, but obviously if it's something I'm using a lot,
it can justify
that sort of cost.
And it just means that you don't necessarily have to stress out about how many times when you're producing videos, you're just trying to find a high definition version of a particular picture that you want to use. You're just constantly going,
exactly. I mean, my renders of videos up until 2020, August 2020, all Abroad in Japan videos were 1080p, which is a tragedy because looking back at it, 1080p, there is a big difference between 4K and 1080p. I couldn't tell because I was always editing until August 2020. I was always editing on my laptop on the small screen. And now I've got a silly iMac, which has a screen the size of Sardinia. Like, I can actually see all the imperfections and whatnot. But I've been shooting in 4K since 2017, but I've been rendering them out at 1080p. So I've taken all these 1080p renders, putting them in this program, and it's coming out 4K. It's looking almost as good as it would if I'd rendered it out 4K originally. And it is absolutely astonishing. So you could take your Sapporo video that you shot on an 8mm camera, whatever the hell it was, in one in like 120p resolution.
Like a red camera.
Well, yeah, you could take your 144p.
Doesn't film have like a much higher resolution technically? But yeah, I know what
it does.
Like,
yeah,
it's I cannot imagine how. But what I like about it is I like AI upscaling that gets it a bit wrong and just puts features in that weren't really there.
That's true, actually. I've had that
problem.
A guy
who takes like loads of pictures from like low resolution shots of old wrestlers from like the '70s and the '80s. It looks a bit wonky. They do faces beautifully, but everything around the face, it just looks like they're wearing a mask of their own face. And there's a guy who just upscales all the classic images and stuff. So,
I did actually... Yeah. It's funny you should bring that up. I did have an issue. When I was getting an image of Ken Watanabe to use in the Ken Watanabe documentary, I ran it through, and it was quite a low-res image. I think it was from Inception.
Yeah.
It was a little bit blurry. It wasn't 4K. It was more like 360p or whatever. And I needed to blow it up. And I did it. And like his lip was facing the wrong way when the algorithm had had its like got to work on it. And in the end, I couldn't use it because I don't want to like be defamed for like making it look like Ken Watanabe had been hit with a hammer. So I didn't use that image.
Yeah,
so
but
you've got to be careful.
Warner Brothers should allow you to use that picture because it's not technically a film still. You've created something different. It's been transformative. That's fair.
Transformative. Yeah. That's right. But it's really cool. It's really kind of cool technology. Yeah. So
that's amazing. I don't know how the amount of computational power just to up literally instead of you being asked to go and find a fucking picture on the internet of a high def picture of Ken Watanabe from the film Inception, you just sort of went, oh fuck it, I'll just run it through this, and it's spent hours while this Amazon server grinds through it and returns it using deep blue, or whatever it's called.
Deep blue. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's cool though. It's exciting. But it's also quite scary. You know, what are the implications of this technology, where you could like upscale it in a few years to like 16K, and you can like take a little image and blow it up. No, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. It'll be interesting. We got a story this week from Ollie, who says, "Hello, Carnivorous Chris and Perilous Pete. My name is Ollie, and I'm from Munich. What you need to know for this story is that I have friends in Japan that live in Adachi, in a part of Tokyo. One is Japanese, and her husband is American. The area which they inhabit, Takenotsuka, is notorious for organised crime." Yeah, and it's literally visible when you're there. But it makes foreigners a rare sight as well. I was spending the last week of my trip with them, and the night before my morning flight, I'd wisely already switched to a German sleep schedule to get to not get destroyed by the jet lag upon return. Nice. Naturally, I was craving a late-night soda. Naturally. It was 3 a.m. at that point, and I decided to go to a convenience store to attain my desired beverage. My friend previously gave me the key to an old bicycle, so I figured I'd take it to get back quickly. On the way, two police officers stopped me and just demanded to see my passport, which luckily I had on me. They looked it up and told me, as far as my Japanese can understand, that I forgot to switch on my bike lights, which was indeed true, and I hadn't noticed since all the streets were lit up. I apologised and thought that this was all they wanted when they proceeded to ask me exactly whose bike it was. Explaining the situation was beyond my level of Japanese, so I tried to explain where I was staying and whose bike it was with Google Translate. They checked things in their phone and told me that couldn't be right, which made me panic. Oh, God. More and more police officers proceeded to show up in the course of the conversation, until the officers asked me to accompany them to the station. I complied and biked to the station, surrounded by seven officers, also on bikes. It's like a criminal mastermind, this poor Ollie. As I got there, they asked what I'd been doing in Japan, and I tried to explain that I was a tourist. When I mentioned that my flight was due in 7 hours, they started to panic as well. There was no translator available, so they wanted to cut things short and asked me where my friend's apartment was. I showed them on the map, and they took me and my bike to the apartment, where I had to go through the awkward process of waking up my friend and her husband to tell her that the police wanted a little chat. They told her something I could not understand, after which she started searching through some files in her drawer. After 5 minutes, she found a document and handed it to the police. Upon looking at it, they apologised and vanished within 1 minute. My friend told me that bike theft, apparently, is the number one crime in Japan, and therefore bikes in Japan were registered to the owner in a database upon purchase from a vendor. Privately sold bikes, however, can only have proof of ownership via some sort of contract, which was the document that she showed to the police. I was ashamed of causing so much trouble during the night, but she shrugged it off and said that this happens to her husband all the time. Anyway, that's my story, guys. Keep what you're doing. Best regards, Ollie. Not a bike thief. Well done, Ollie. What a nightmare. Bloody hell.
Just wanted a late night soda. And look, it's if advice was needed, it is very much needed. If you want a late night soda, just make sure you get some soda before you go to bed, because you're going to wake up thirsty. You're going to wake up thirsty.
Life hacks with Pete. I mean, that's a bit ridiculous. I've never been stopped by the police still after all these years, and I want to keep it up that way. All right, apart from that one time when you were there and I was speeding for like 5 kilometres, whatever. But I've never been stopped in like Tokyo. I think we talked about this on a Trash Toast episode that I was on recently. Connor had been stopped a few times, and I think even Joey got stopped. But then when Joey spoke Japanese, they were like, oh, don't worry, we'll stop now. We'll stop harassing you. There's it's a little bit unsettling. I mean, I don't know what they're expecting. Ollie to be some sort of bike thief. What were they expecting? Well,
someone told me that in like Shinjuku and stuff, because there's just so many bikes left around, and there's nobody really has locks on their bikes. That people just pissed, get on the wrong bike, and just cycle home. And then again. So probably loads of the thefts are probably just
probably
just accidents.
But one thing, make sure if you you go out drinking, you're not really like allowed to cycle home.
Yeah,
a lot of people I know in the countryside did it. Because they don't have much choice. It's not Tokyo, there's no taxis. So people do it. But like, just be careful. If you do go out drinking and you get on a bike, you could be buggered if you get caught by the police. But
yeah,
I really don't know that many people that have been stopped by the police by virtue of the fact that I'm not based in Tokyo. But if you do live in Tokyo, don't be surprised if the police do ask you for ID at some point or another. It's a miracle that I've never been stopped. But then I kind of stick to a lot of the mainstream touristy places, right? Shibuya, Shinjuku, Asakusa. If you go somewhere like Adachi, then you're asking for trouble. I don't actually know where Adachi is, in which neighbourhood that is. Do you know it? You've been there? I'm sure you've been there.
No, I don't think I have.
The shady dealings of Pete Donaldson.
I've done nothing, officer. I've done nothing wrong, officer. I'm familiar with the place, but I've never been there. I've got no cause to use it.
Okay, it is. It's... I don't know where that is. Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. It's kind of like, it's kind of north of Asakusa and Ueno.
Right.
About a 25 minute drive north of there. I've no reason to go up there. But
Adachi City.
Adachi. Keep an eye out. What we got now this week? Story of the week. What we got, Mr. Dawson?
We got a new story, and you're not going to be believing what's happened with this bloody Japanese ferry, Chris.
Oh, God.
You're not going to believe
what's happened.
Now, I don't really like this story because I recently watched a documentary about the Costa Concordia ferry disaster slash cruise ship disaster where that Italian captain ran aground just showing off. The Sunflower Shirotoko ferry recently took a trip from Tomakomai port in Hokkaido, driving right down the eastern coast of Japan down to Ibaraki, right? And it's a journey that this cargo hours. Ship makes regularly. But this trip in particular had everyone very excited because no one was steering the ship.
Oh my God, it sounds like a ghost ship. Ghost ship.
This foundation has created this... Yeah, it is literally a ghost ship. It's created this ship that can basically... it's the first in the world, the Sunflower Shirotoko's voyage, the first in the world to be undertaken without anybody on the bridge, without anybody at the helm. It was able to make this journey because you've got not only the radar system, you also had like augmented reality navigation systems, and it used AR cameras, IR cameras and stuff to help detect other ships and avoid collisions with bits of rock and stuff. But it's basically a bit of a revolution. It's the sort of thing that, you know, like we've got like Tesla self-driving cars and autonomous vehicles and stuff. You almost think, well, kind of ships in the sea, kind of the safest place to test this stuff out, this technology out. But
in theory,
the ship travelled for around about 18 hours down the east coast of Kanto, and it's probably going to be used in the future, certainly at the start anyway, for transporting goods. 80% of the distribution of goods between Hokkaido and Kanto, the main island of Japan, it's mainly just transporting goods and bits and bobs and stuff. And so people on the internet in Japan, they're a little bit concerned about people taking over the ship, like hijacking and stuff.
Under Siege with Steven Seagal.
Yeah, it's weird. Some people have been saying planes have been using autopilot for years. I've often wondered why ships haven't done the same. I mean, you would think it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, would you need like a security officer on there rather than a pilot? Presumably there was somebody on the ship who could steer the thing in case of trouble, but maybe he could sort of double up as a guy who's moving around pallets or something.
I want to reenact Captain Phillips. I want to be like, I am the captain.
Yeah. When I get on the boat.
Break into the bridge. The boat I went on with Connor. It's the Sunflower Shirotoko. It might be that boat that I went on with Connor because it was the same route, right? From Tomokai to Ibaraki. But we got off halfway in Sendai.
So what's this hefty boat. Did you meet the pilot? And the pilot just went, oh, I can't be asked. I'm not. I don't want to do this anymore. The last qualified ship's captain for that route just went, I've just met Chris Broad and Cedo Vieira, and I just
got overboard.
I don't want to be a part of this anymore.
We met one person on the boat. Pilot. We did meet one interesting character on the boat, a Swedish dude who recognised us, really nice guy. And we were like, what are you doing going to Sendai? And he's like, I'm going for the weekend. I'm going to IKEA to get some meatballs. And we were like, okay, that sounds like a very stereotypical thing. But that's what he was doing, and fair play to him. But so it was a pretty rough ferry. I can't say I enjoyed that ferry. With or without a captain, it's quite a bumpy ride because the north... sort of the Pacific coastline's a bit wavy. Is that the expression? Turbulent, wavy, bumpy.
Wavy,
I was sick the whole time. It was awful. I don't see the problem with this. You know, a ferry on autopilot in the middle of the sea. What could possibly go wrong?
Pirates. I mean, it's just pirates, really, isn't it?
The pirates of Japan. Yes. I think fair enough, though. Save some costs. Make it happen. Yeah. The only thing I would worry about is parking the damn thing. Imagine a ferry coming into port and just smashing into the port.
<It's> like, just what? Imagine that.
But like, I don't know. Rocking. I can't recommend going on one of these ferries, though. It wasn't very pleasant. The same journey you could do like 2 hours on a bullet train.
Yeah, I was sort of working on an interview with the recording artist Benny Blank. Is it Benny Blanco? Benny Blanco? That sounds about right. He doesn't fly. I had a bad experience back in the day, and so he just takes the ferry over from America to Britain. Which is incredible, really, because I thought for some reason modern technology, and you know, there's probably a massive need for people who just do not like flying. I thought there'd like be modern technology taken where you could absolutely just cut that journey across the Atlantic to, you know, a smaller. But it does take a canny few days, and I was like, why did I think that it would only take like a day? Why did I think that? Surely there's technology like a powerboat that could get you over, but then the fuel would probably be prohibitively capacious. Mm. I don't know. I just assumed that we'd have this nailed, but I think it's a good few weeks. I think it might be a good few weeks to get across the Atlantic, which is incredible, really. Wow.
I think it's 5 days.
Is it 5 days? All right, okay. All right, fair. Either way, it's upsetting. I thought it was quicker.
I was trying to look up the fastest time, but what's the fastest transatlantic shipping crossing? It was in 1996.
Yeah, but 1969. Would that be in a boat from, like, Iceland to Alaska or something weird like that?
Yeah, the article's very bad. It doesn't say. God damn it, why is this... All right, 5 days, 14 hours, 21 minutes.
Yeah, I thought it'd be quicker. I just thought it would be quicker.
Yeah, 5 days. Mm. I would have thought that'd be quicker as well. Do you know how long it took Concorde? It took Concorde about 3 hours.
Wasn't the record like in the high twos or something?
It was the record, I think, was about two and a half hours on Concorde, yeah.
I think I took a I think I took a flight last time I was in America, and it was astonishingly quick. Like the you don't want to think of a plane being that affected by tailwinds, but Christ, I think they did it in like it felt like 4 hours. It was so quick.
Oh my God! We actually got quite on the subject of airplanes. We had quite a few emails this week. Tragically, a YouTuber called Josh Newman died in Iceland in a plane crash.
Oh, yes.
But he was in he's got a channel that's got one of the most popular skateboarding channels, and he's actually got some really cool videos. He's got 1.2 million followers, but tragically, he and I think three other people on the plane died. It was in a Cessna 172, the same Cessna I'd flown in Kagoshima, which I think is why people were emailing us about it. But he lost his life over Iceland in the plane. They don't know what happened, but quite bizarre, given that Cessnas are very safe, you know. I don't know what happened there. It'd be interesting to find out what happened, but tragic indeed. And a reminder that, that's why I'm scared of planes. Every time I read about an airplane crash, I take one step back from getting on a plane again. And it's not fun.
No.
Maybe I'll take the ferry. Maybe I'll take the ferry back to the UK from Japan. How would you even do that? Is that possible? Or do you need to get a ferry to San Francisco, get on a train that goes across America, then get on another ferry to go from New York to London? Could be a good video.
Could be.
It's a Pete Dawson-esque.
Back and forth. Just live my life on a ferry for 3 weeks, just back and forth to America and back.
How long would that take? I think it'd probably take 2 months, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Just back and forth.
Yeah.
Probably good Wi-Fi, probably good satellite Wi-Fi. I think it'd be all right.
Good Wi-Fi, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
We'll be back with your questions and comments in the fax machine, guys, in just a moment.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds. Like the breathable, silky smooth tree dasher, the responsive foam and extra grip of the tree runner, or the classic low-top look of the tree piper. Allbirds has a lightweight, ultra-packable shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Join Luke Moore and me, Pete Donaldson, for an unplanned half hour where we discuss life's great mysteries like, can a man survive by eating roadkill, as well as the week's most bizarre news stories and your ridiculous adventures, like this one about an almost catastrophic shortcut.
We eventually came to a large railed fence, which I decided we should climb. I scaled the 15-foot-ish fence, and as I was sat atop, ready to jump down, three or four police came running from a little building we hadn't noticed before shouting at me and grabbing my mate Sam. I was faced with the choice of legging it onto the other side of the fence or gallantly going back to help my friend. I returned to Sam, and the quite pissed off police in my gallantry was rewarded as they advised me that I had been climbing into the zoo and would have landed in an animal enclosure.
Listen to the Luke and Pete Show wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
The Luke and Pete Show is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Donaldson?
We got a message from Ross, and he is resident, or certainly hailing from, Teesside, which is where I come from. We are Teesside, we're the future, we're the pride. We are Teesside, and we're standing side by side. The gift that we give the world, the future of tomorrow for our children. Teesside. Chris is always
singing
going on
like
about-
that. That tanked the economy in Teesside. Chris, that's my now economy.
Chris is always going on. Chris is always going on about missing sausages, proper telly, and other British stuff while he's in Japan. So I was wondering, is there anything that Japanese people generally miss while they're out of the country? Is there a food, activity, or other thing that collectively reminds Japanese folks of home? Thank you, Ross from Teesside, the UK.
I mean, when I was with Natsuki and he came to the UK, he loved eating Japanese food in the UK, and giving his critique on how awful it was. He loved it. He was like, oh, it's ramen shit.
Like, so it's like American people dreadful. going to like France and eating hamburgers and going, oh, these hamburgers are roast.
Effectively, we love doing it, don't we? And I love doing that as a British person, eating a British take of a dish in Japan and being like, oh, it's disgusting. Fish and chips like that in England. Yeah, I don't know. What do Japanese people miss when they're outside of Japan?
Just, ooh, I don't know. Yeah, just I mean, good food probably.
Things like, that fucking foods. Work. Yeah, things that work. I remember, like when we did Natsuki the movie, just things broke all the time, and Natsuki was baffled by how things
everything
didn't
breaking,
work.
Yeah.
Well, the vending machine got stuck.
Vending
got some
machine.
Crisps,
can you imagine?
And then it's just awful. And then we got on a train, London Underground at like Victoria Station, and he got his London Underground ticket, and he put it in the machine to open the barrier so we could get on the train. But the barrier didn't open for literally no reason. There was no conceivable reason. And I asked the man, what's wrong with the ticket? And he went, I think he literally said, England, didn't it, mate? And let us through. And I was like, oh, yeah. Things just don't work in the UK. That would be like in Japan, that would like break the country if you couldn't get through a ticket machine.
Oh, there'd be apologies. There'd be from the CEO of Crossrail would be apologising, resigning, crying at a press conference.
Well, remember, if your train's like 2 minutes late in Japan, it's either 2 minutes or 5 minutes, you get a little slip of paper that you can take to your employer and prove that your train was actually delayed, because otherwise your employer would just be like, bollocks, trains aren't late here. So when it does happen, you have to have some sort of proof, right? You get to have proof. So, yeah, I think Natsuki was just baffled by the concept of things breaking a lot. Didn't stop his wife from eating all the cheese and then being sick on the plane for 11 hours, all the way back to Japan. We got one here from Eileen. He says, dear Chris and Pete, my name's Eileen. I'm 24 and a German from the beautiful Black Forest. Now, I have never been to Japan, but I've been to many other countries, and wherever I went, I get mistaken for being an Irish girl. What? I have really light skin and freckles, reddish hair, so I kind of understand it. But even in Ireland, after they heard me speak with my English-German accent, it got to a point where I just play along until they noticed that I'm in fact German. My question is, have you two ever been mistaken for another nationality? Much love from Germany, Eileen. That's a really weird story.
It reminds me of... in my head, she looks like the woman out of Horizon Zero Dawn.
<She's walking laughs> the protagonist.
The forest with a crossbow.
Hey, Pete Donaldson gets mistaken for being Colonel Sanders quite often.
I get mistaken for everyone, B, everyone, C, everyone. I get mistaken for everyone who's just a bit funny looking, who's got an undercut. I'm mistaken. I get a lot of... I think I could pass for a Lithuanian or something. I reckon I could probably pass for some
for specific,
maybe some Eastern Europeans. I think I look quite Eastern.
Oddly European specific.
Well, you know, dark hair.
I get mistaken for being everyone that's got hair, like Marcus Mumford or Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah,
Elon Musk, but for some reason.
I think Marcus Mumford's probably the most accurate one because he's got he's also got like your kind of moustache as well.
What, the moustache that doesn't really work?
Little guy, little spivvy moustache. Like a little, yeah. Spiv, little spiv.
It's not a compliment, is it? But that's I've never been mistaken for another nationality. That's just you, Eileen. That's such a bizarre situation there.
Yeah.
We got one here from Habib. He says, "Hi guys, hope you're both doing well. As content creators, what do you fear most about a prolonged break? Loss of income or sudden loss of followers or interest?" I ask because Chris has spoken before about being too scared to stop posting or take a longer break, and often thinks that this could all be over soon. Cheers, guys. Habib. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Loss of income's not good, but I think certainly loss of followers and interest is something that all YouTubers worry about. And I think it is an unfounded worry in many respects. Like, I took a lot of time off in 2019. I had like entire months where I didn't post a video because I was burnt out from Journey Across Japan and whatnot. And, you know, whenever I came back, everyone was still there waiting. And that was kind of cool. I do think, in this day and age, there is sort of the pressure to post more and more to sort of keep up with everyone. But I think that's been to the detriment of my health or my enthusiasm for YouTube. I certainly spending time with the Trash Chase lads, Joey and Connor, who pump out content like no fucking tomorrow across all their channels. I've been lulled into thinking that, oh, I should do that too. I should put out loads of videos. But in reality, I shouldn't put out loads of videos. I should just do what I always do, which is make videos around a topic that excite me or an idea that I get excited about. And so we all have our different styles. You know, Connor does his live shows. Joey likes to do commentary. And I like to sort of take my time and do something a bit kind of more crazy and weird and, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Bespoke? I don't know. I like to challenge myself with different things. Like, I'd like to learn something new for a video, like how to do a green screen or how to rotoscope something or how to do a drone. Like everything I do, I like to learn something along the way. And, yeah.
And the rest of them are just fooling.
Yes, fools. You've got to do it your own style. What about you, though, Pete?
Yeah.
Naturally, it's the loss of income. What with the tax situation that you mentioned last week?
The worst thing that ever happened to me is earning money for goofing around, which means I'm just constantly goofing around and I can never be serious ever. But yeah, I do kind of feel sorry for YouTube creators in particular because they do experience burnout and also they have a certain style that worked for them, you know, back 10 years ago or whatever. But then you've got a little bit later, it's kind of like your interests may have changed or what the kind of videos that you want to do may have changed, but your viewers haven't gone on that journey with you. So therefore, I was watching this guy on YouTube that I quite like, who basically takes video games and he basically edits the initialization files so that it can be run on really shitty hardware. So the game looks like absolute shit, but it becomes a slightly different art form. So the art style becomes completely different because this guy is able to edit initialization files down to such a place where it looks really, really, it looks weirdly, eerily beautiful, even though it's running at like 200 frames per second. And the
what
polygons
do you mean initialization files?
So like with a PC game, to make whenever you make a change in the menu, sort of saying, say you want to reduce shadows to make it run a bit better, improve performance by getting rid of so many light sources or shadows or ray tracing and stuff like that. Every time you edit something in a PC game in the menu, that basically is just a front end for a doc file, like an RTF or a text file that just tells the computer what it needs to be doing next time it starts the game. So this guy edits them from a really, like, on the INI file, the initialization file, and he knows how to do it with different renderers and stuff to make these video games look incredibly weird and cut down and look like PlayStation 1 games from back in the day.
That's awesome.
But he's got the point where the game engines don't allow him to do that anymore because they've just got to the point where they either do everything automatically or they just don't want anyone fucking about with it and it's all closed off. And so he started doing these long-form documentaries about the history of, you know, the Game & Watch or Nintendo NES or whatever. And he loves doing them, but I think he's a bit concerned that his audience will not follow him because they never watched him for that. He's Dutch or something. But So there is a real pressure to play to the crowd, play to your audience, and you experience burnout because they're not the videos you want to do every time. So it's difficult. Yeah. And fundamentally, just people just spaffing out video after video after video because they have to, because it's a job, and, you know, that's what they want to do. It's freedom, but it's also you're just climbing into another cage, just a slightly bigger one with gold trimmings on it.
No, that's a good point. And I've certainly seen, I won't say they are, but I've seen big YouTubers who have like often pursued a different, like a musical career or a singing career, yeah, right? They transition from doing comedy to music or singing.
Yeah.
And that's come at the detriment of their channel. They're following their passion, they're doing what they enjoy, but damaging their channel and their brand or whatever and losing lots of viewers as a result. And not sure really how to feel about that. Clearly they're doing what they want to do, but yeah, obviously it's something I've got to think about. I don't want to make videos about Japan forever. I'm already at the point where if I make another video about Japan, I'll smash my head against a fucking wall. There's only so much I can talk about Japan, especially now during COVID when you can't travel or do anything. It's driving me mad. So something I've got to think about in the future. I'd like to pivot to doing more comedy stuff or more challenges or more finding more quirky things. But, you know, I've kind of done pretty much everything you could possibly ever do about Japan. And the level, as the sort of production quality and the things you've got to do now to keep up are pretty difficult in the world of Japan, right?
Yeah.
You've got to do a day in the life video. You've got to follow someone around all day and they brush their teeth and deliver some parcels. You've got to make like a bespoke documentary, and I don't want to go in that direction. And I don't want to sit on the most expensive train all day, every day, or the most expensive bus in Japan. All these sort of videos, you know. I know what I have to do if I want to get a million views, but I don't want to do it anymore. And that's a massive conflict that I'm battling with right now in my head about what I want to do. But it's always tough in winter when you sit inside in the cold ruminating all these ideas and problems, but I can't complain. I can't complain.
I mean, look, this is exactly
on Japan Clips channel, isn't it?
It's about you. Just do something on that. Do some little cook ones. I've told you before. Get down to 7-Eleven. Get, you know, just pick up some shit. Just go look at this shit.
That's 7-Eleven. Exactly what I don't want to do anymore.
Exactly,
you know?
What you want to be doing.
I should be doing something. I want to buy a toy car and drive it around. That's what I want to do.
I'll do that. Just drive around. Drive around, talk your hands, annoy everyone. Dress up as one of those robots.
I had a mental breakdown.
Pepper robots and just like look like you've gone mad.
Take your clothes off in Shinjuku. Take my clothes off in Shinjuku. I spent 72 hours in Japan having a mental fucking breakdown. Groundbreaking content.
I drank cooking oil for 3 days in Japan.
Oh my God.
Just do like stupid stunts, but right at the end in Japan.
That is the way YouTube's heading. That is the sort of shit you have to do to thrive.
I chiseled my fingers off in Japan.
it's the level. So bear that in mind, guys. If you want to make it big in Japan, go and drink some oil and dance around in Shibuya Crossing naked. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to brawnjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Don't do what I just said.
I don't want any of that.
An article in 5 years. Chris made me do it. He said it in a podcast. Don't do that. Be happy. Enjoy life.
Be happy.
Of course, stay tuned. The Brawn Japan podcast back later this week. Still all over again. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, enjoy the rest of your week. And we'll see you then. Do it over again. One more time, the Brawn Japan podcast. Bye for now.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.